Thanks for listening to this episode of Superpower State of Mind with me, Marlin Anderson. I've been excited about all the conversations I've had, but this one I've been itching to give you. It's with somebody I've known on social media for years, as you'll hear, and also someone who has kindly given me their wisdom when I reached out to them for help and support. It's Sarah Nicole Andrew. Sarah is known online as a bird's papaya and posts about body positivity and is perhaps one of the original posters, even though at the time she had no idea she was. We'll get into her story, the pressures of social media, and to be honest, the art of not giving a crap. Relax and enjoy this episode of Superpower State of Mind with me, Marlin Anderson. You're the OG Instagrammer, and I'm going to put it out there. I feel like you started the whole movement with body positivity. You did. You're the OG. Like, I don't even care what anybody says. You started it.
I think that I'm the first that a lot of people saw it, but I definitely think that, I wasn't even part of body positivity. I think I was maybe mainstream body positivity, but body positivity actually went back into like the 80s.
Yeah.
It was like incredibly championed, especially for more like fat liberation and for people who were incredibly marginalized. So I think that I maybe hit the my healing from an eating disorder really hit at a time where I think social media was ready for the conversation as well. So it sort of was like these two big things that sort of combined. And then I brought myself into it, and then I had to learn a lot about the history too, right? But for a lot of people, I may be the first experience they had in like, oh my gosh, did you just show your cellulite and stomach on the internet? Like that was, it was maybe a lot of people's first experience in those sort of categories for sure.
So we all know what you do and what you stand for and the amazing content you post online. But I want to know more about you, Sarah, and where it all started and your childhood and growing up and what kind of trauma you faced. Because with a lot that I see online, people that have a huge influence with great things to talk about, it has come from a place of hurt and pain at some point and deep-rooted trauma. And then they turn it into this kind of light worker mode where they share their love and they just kind of just heal the world through their own suffering, which it sounds mad, but it's just, and it's amazing to see, you know?
I think about this all the time because I'm like, I hate that. I hate it. I hate that we had to go through something in order to be something. And I also don't want people to ever have to like go through trauma to like be that kind of person. I also want to bubble wrap everybody who is even going through a semblance of what I went through so I can help them, right? And we also are only our only point of reference, and I really try and stay out of the pain Olympics because we all have our own individual forms of suffering and trauma in our own lives, and we only have to the extent of what we've dealt with, right? And so we only know what we know and what we've experienced and how that sort of brings us to our lived experience. So for me, I had a very great upbringing. I had a very amazing family. Not without diet culture, as it was a stamp of the times. Like it just was, right? I grew up with a mom who struggled with chronic illness. There was eating disorders within our family. And I always felt like I was the one who was just never impacted by anything. I was sort of like the light little bubble that walked around, never had an issue. I didn't struggle with mental health. I didn't struggle with food. I definitely struggled with my body because I developed a lot younger than maybe some of my peers. And I was always the bigger girl in class. I just naturally was. And I'm not saying I was the biggest at all points, but I remember always recognizing that I was the biggest, and there was major reminders of that as I was growing up, especially when I hit around like 12, 13, because at the time there wasn't clothing sizes above a size 12 in the stores. So as a young kid, I didn't really get to partake in the styles of the time. I had to shop. I went into being like a little bit of a tomboy, and I recognize now that I loved feminine things. Feminine things didn't fit me. So I had to adopt sort of this tomboy persona and style because I could wear the extra large at Abercrombie Men's and I couldn't wear the extra large at Abercrombie Girls. Now, things have changed now. Now, if I were looking back, I would have definitely been a straight-sized, probably erring on the side of thin, but at that time was not. I was very much always reminded that I was the bigger girl. Boys would like me in secret, but never in public.
Yeah.
So I got away with, you know, having a lot of like boyfriends who definitely just kept me secret, or guys that I liked that I was always sort of on the side, never really a public person for them to date. And then I remember in high school having to like drive to Canada borders on the States. So we would drive to the States so I could shop some of the sizes down in the States, and slowly got my way through that. And I remember when I was 17, I met my ex-husband. And while I don't talk about like the context of our relationship, I will say a couple things. One, when you have low self-esteem, you kind of just are like so grateful for anything you get. And he was an athlete. I was a chubby girl. The fact that I even got attention was like, there's no such thing as red flags when you are somebody who feels like you're already such a problem that you're bringing somebody. Like if they like me, then I'll do anything. Yeah. If I'm accepted into this fold, I'll do anything. So I got married young. I had 3 children by the time I was 25. I was a stay-at-home mom for 10 years. I started a blog in my living room while my husband worked, and I continued to gain weight through the natural experiences of life and from having 3 kids at a young age, and eventually went into probably multiple forms of postpartum, didn't really understand them. Mine were mostly like anxiety and things like that, and eventually moved back home to my hometown, and that's when I really recognized my body again. It felt like high school again. It felt like I was, great, I'm running into all my friends and I'm just bigger than everybody. Not everybody had started having kids yet, had gone through those body changes, and I had. Not to mention, I had stretch marks that I'd never seen in any publication ever. I've never seen them on anybody else's body. I didn't know they existed on anybody else except for me. So I had shame just compiling on top of shame, on top of shame, on top of shame. And then I move home to my hometown, and this one photo gets uploaded of me on social media, and I just clicked. Like, my self-hate had hit its high point. And what a lot of people do with self-hate is they use it for motivation. And that's exactly what I did. But my motivation was not met with any sort of expertise. So it was download an app, eat the toddler amount of food a day, exercise 3 times a day. I just went so far into it, and everyone was so happy for me. So it just felt like my whole life was leading up to this moment where I was going to be this after photo, and everyone was so happy for me, and they were all going to accept me, and everything was going to get better. And, you know, a lot of people know the end of the story, which is weight loss didn't. I ended up losing 100 pounds and ended up with disordered eating, a slew of health issues, booming social media, which maybe was a perk and also a bad thing, and the worst self-esteem I'd ever had. So I was so confused how I had gone through this whole process, and now my marriage is falling apart because I'm coming face-to-face with all the realities. I'm coming face-to-face with this relationship isn't good. It's not working. I'm coming face-to-face with I lost all the weight and I'm still not happy. Yeah. I'm coming face-to-face with you actually have like major issues going on. You haven't skirted around everything that your family has ever dealt with. You're not perfect. You don't get that. You have a lot of things you got to work through. It all sort of boomed at once. And at the same time, I have this social media. So I'm like, I'm exhausted. I can't do this anymore. I can't be this person anymore. I don't have the cookie cutter family. That's gone. I don't have the lie that I've been selling that weight loss equals happiness. That's gone. I don't have any of the crutches I've been using my whole life. So it's all gone. And my only option left was to start being honest. And that was what my therapist was pushing me to do. And that sort of ended up being, like you said, the light of the world, the light and the healing. I was openly healing. And so I was problematically healing, and I was doing it wrong and I was doing it right all at the same time, because it was to the extent of what I knew. It was to the extent of my healing. And I can look back now on all of it and be like, oh gosh, you said a lot of wrong things. But I'm so grateful that I did it so out loud and so flawed, and not like I'm some expert to come into the space. I'm just an expert of being a human and being myself and coming through what a lot of people go through, which is hardship and figuring it all out.
But where did the self-esteem issues originate from, though? Like, where did you see them coming in? So you'd be looking at everyone else and you'd be thinking that you were bigger and that you weren't happy. So at what point did that come in?
I mean, probably around the 7th and 8th grade, because I remember I always did well with friends. I remember really riding off my personality. If you're funny, you could be accepted anywhere. So I was like, just be funny. Just be a really good friend. I had like my parents always put on really cool birthday parties for me. So I always had all these like little things that I was riding off of in order to like get through, I guess. But I was like, I remember my friends would openly make like fat jokes at me. They would draw pictures of me behind my back. I remember like, and you know how like when things like this happen in your childhood and you're like, oh, I remember that. I don't remember almost anything from my childhood, but I remember when a boy one time told me after a vacation that it looked like I'd eaten too many cheeseburgers when I was away. And I remember down to the exact outfit I was wearing, because it was a crushed velvet purple daisy shirt crop top, and it was purple corduroy flares and jelly sandals. Why do I remember that? Because it is like literally burned in my brain of memory as like what at the time was probably a big trauma. And now I'm like, oh, it's a little baby tea trauma. But these memories burn into you. So when somebody that you look up to or you care about or you respected their opinion puts that on you, it changed the fiber of who I was. I never wore a crop top again until I was in my 30s. I wouldn't, like, it was like cover, hide, like, just get away from all of those sort of commentary. Going to high school, I remember starting gym class with getting weighed in front of all of my peers and being like openly told that I was bigger than everybody else, having my fat pinched and told me like how much I needed to lose. It was like the entire rhythm, and it wasn't even my family. It was like literally the system that I was walking through as a child was constantly telling me that I was too big, not fitting, and you know, the clothing stores, too big, don't fit. It was just a constant. So I don't have like one pinpointed thing or moment. I have a consistent reminder of you are bigger. And I need to remind everybody this. I was a size 12, 14 at the age of 12, 14. Like that is still thin. That is still like by today's standard is very thin privileged, right? Like I'm a size 12 again. And I'm like, oh my gosh, like it's so wild to me, which is why I have such a heart for people who exist in larger bodies. Because even though I was never, the biggest I ever got was like an 18, 20 in size. There is so many people who are still living in that sort of society. I could talk about the 90s and the 2000s till the cows come home from my experience, but that it hasn't gone away. It's just we've extended sizing to a degree, and there's still an entire group of people who are being left out from a lot of life experiences, a lot of those things, and those constant reminders of you still can't sit with us. It's just like that constant, right? So I was always hyper aware of my body. When I was losing weight, I was hyper aware of my body. And when it comes into the work I do today, it's almost like I recognize I have a body. I know that it's a part of like who I am and what I do and how people will judge me and how I will judge myself. But how do I deprioritize my body from being the core purpose of my existence so I can just actually show up and live the rest of my life? Because I think I've now realized that there's no satisfaction in a body. You're never going to be happy with it. So how do you figure out how to get past those feelings and get out and start living? Because I'm just tired of sidelining myself from my life. And that's the consistent story from my childhood too, is like witnessing my own memories be just watching everybody else.
You know, one thing you said was interesting. You said you kind of, all the boys loved you and you'd go on these dates with these boys, but they would kind of hide you in a sense. Do you feel like you seeked some validation from that? Because when I look back at my teen years, I'd go on dates and things and all my validation came from men, which was really weird. And I thought that I had to be loved and liked by these guys. And if they didn't like me, there was something wrong with me. And that played a big part of how my relationships turned out as an adult and how I would seek all my validation in the wrong men.
Yeah, 100%. I think a lot of us do, because we were conditioned to think that that was our value, right? Our value is in, if you're attractive to men, then you've met it, which is why we're constantly threatened at the idea of aging. And I'm not saying I'm perfect. I still slather a crap ton of stuff on my face every night because I'm terrified of it. But I understand at the same time that that's like a deep ingrained aging is bad. Aging means that you lose opportunity. Aging means that you're not attractive anymore. Aging means the opposite of everything that we're told hold is like desirable and beautiful and great and worthy in this world. So I even found when I was losing weight and I was getting the validation, it was so frustrating because you would see people treat you differently, especially men. Now that you were like in the mold, right, of what was acceptable, and they would do anything for you. And I was kind of turned off by it because I was like, I have been here the whole time. I have always been this funny. I have always been this charming. I have always had these sparkling hazel eyes. And like, you just decide, you're so conditioned to have never seen me before that I wasn't even visible to you. And women were the same, like, and women were kind of in a flip side too. I became a threat and I became a friend. So I was a threat to some and I was a friend to others. And I was like, I am literally the same person. Losing weight in real time and like actually having that perspective of like how different people treat you is, it makes sense why people hold on to thinness so much, because you're like, if I lose this, I lose everything. I lose my friends. I lose the attraction of others. My relationships of the past, like I was like, well, there is nothing for you. When I got divorced, even though I was like really thin at the time, I didn't ever perceive a reality to which I would find another person or ever get married again. To me, I was like, I'm damaged goods. Not only am I like, I have a very stretched out body. I've had 3 children. You know, I got like really fixated on like how tight my vagina was, because I was like, you're not there anymore. You've had 3 children, all of these things that were just such fears that I was like this worthless piece of nothing entering into the dating scene. And thank God that I was like, the crux of my divorce was also me dealing with body issues. And it was actually through dating my now husband, who was like constantly like, I want to have experiences with you. Can we please go out and like eat food together? He never once, and to this day, has made a body comment on me as much as I've pushed him to. He just doesn't. So I've been able to go through gaining weight for my health, gaining weight in a pregnancy, going through postpartum, and not having a variable of love from somebody else based on that. So that's been a huge part of my healing. As much as I hate to give credit to a man, gotta give credit where credit's due. But my whole life, I've always felt like I didn't feel valuable to men. So I never allowed myself to feel like I was anything of attraction. And then when I did feel valuable to like 1 or 2 guys in my life, then I was like anything for them, anything they wanted, right? So they could dump me when they felt like it, and they could take me back when they felt like it. And then they could treat me like crap. And then like, I would still forgive them the next day. Part of that is me as a person and like being a people pleaser and believing the best in everybody. And the other part is like that deep-seated fear of, and that inherent thing that we're given from the beginning of humanity, which is if you don't have somebody, you don't survive. So I didn't have that idea that I was going to ever be okay. It was actually being a single mom that was the first time in my life that I was like, oh my gosh, nothing can touch me. And that was the first time I really felt so much. And I will live with that forever. I'm in a happy marriage now. I'm in a happy relationship now. I know you can relate to this, but there's like a certain power.
When you met Shane, that's his name, yeah. Right? Shane, isn't it? Yeah, well, Shane. Did you feel whole when you met him? Did you feel like 100% of Sarah?
No. And so we had to have a lot of conversations of how I was going to have my independence within the relationship beginning. So we lived separately. I didn't always want him to be over. I loved having my own space and my own time. I traveled by myself. I did a lot of things that to continue the path of, I didn't want to just go, I went from being in my parents' house to being married. I didn't want to go out from that right into being in another big relationship like that. So I wasn't a single mom for a really huge period of time. It was only a few years, but it really taught me a lot and taught me how much I really could do and how I wasn't, my happiness wasn't dependent on being in a relationship. That being alone, while scary, also taught me what I really liked to do, which allowed me to have a voice in what I wanted, right? So as I was sort of on that journey already, it wasn't until the following year that I started dating Shane. So I was living at my parents' house, but still having a lot of time by myself, trying to figure out like, what is it that I even like? Who am I? And so I was on that path when I met Shane. So in our vows, the one vow he said to me, out of, you know, the few that he said was like, I will always, champion your independence, because he knew how much you know, we always talk about like finding the one and like find your partner and your soulmate and all that stuff. And it's like, what if you are it? Like, what if the idea is that you already are there? So that the feeling of losing a partner, whether by breakup, by illness, or by accident, it's terrifying. Of course, when you love anybody, it's terrifying. But at the same time, I no longer feel like my entire life might bottom out at the loss of one person in it as a partner, right? I feel a sense of choice now. I don't feel like I'm indebted to the relationship. I feel like I'm in a true chosen partnership. And we both come from divorce. Say, though.
They tell us we need to have somebody else to make us whole. But actually, to have a great functioning relationship, we need two whole people that come together, that add to each other's lives and not take away. And that's one thing I struggled with. You know, I think because I grew up without a dad, I didn't have a father figure in my life to kind of show me that rope. So whenever I got into a relationship, I was like all for it, you know, like put everything in. And then when we'd break up or split, I feel like, oh my God, I need them to survive. And so it was only when I gave birth this time around and did the whole single mom thing where I was like, shit, no, I can do this on my own. But actually, I complete myself. I don't need anybody else to add to that. So, but to get into a relationship like you have and get married, that is freaking awesome that you can keep that going as well, because you can get sucked into it when you're in it.
Of course. But I think what's really special is because we both came from divorce, we came into a marriage with divorce is always on the table. Like, it's always there. So we always know that we have a safe out if we need it. We also know that it's going to take actual intentionality to be in it. Just being married doesn't mean a guarantee of any regard. It allows me to feel free. It allows me to invest in myself and in the relationship at the same time. I'm not threatened by divorce anymore. I don't think it's going to happen, but I understand that it can. And I think that that has actually allowed me freedom of choice. This relationship is something that I'm in because I choose to be here, because he chooses to be here, not because we're indebted to be here and we have to be here. So there's a lot more intentionality in the relationship, knowing that not every marriage, you know, sort of works out. And I think that it's been really nice to see us grow and change and have that, and also know that it wouldn't be the same if it wasn't for us both going through, you know, devastating divorces and also going through seasons of being on our own before coming together and meeting.
No, it just sounds so crystal clear when you explain it. But it's mad because I turn 30 next month and I feel like I've been through a lot of random tested times, but I'm still figuring stuff out for myself now. And I'm still healing from things that I thought I was healed from. You know, it's like an ongoing journey constantly. So when I hear you say, you know, you've got your kind of happy ending, but you know, it didn't take you like that to get there.
No,
and actually it doesn't matter if I get married at like 40, it doesn't matter, because time is just energy. Time is bullshit. Time is like, you know, and I just hate that everything has to have a time on it.
I know. And there's also like that, like trauma bubbles up in weird ways for me. I was just doing a TikTok about this the other day where like sometimes when things are too good, I immediately am like, what's going to happen? Like, what's going to hit me? What is the thing that's going to fall? When's the shoe going to drop? Even being in like a healthy, happy marriage, sometimes I like get a little pushbacky on it. Because I feel like I'm not, like there's something wrong. Like I don't deserve something good. So I still struggle sometimes with feeling like I deserve it or feeling like I can be trusted. Spending money for me is still hard. I still struggle feeling a lot of guilt around doing anything for myself, taking time off work because I feel value when I'm doing something or earning something. So I have a hard time if I take time off or I spend money. I have a hard time sometimes digesting being loved and received and, you know, attracted to somebody. I feel a lot of guilt. I feel like people are mad at me really easily. These are all things that are like past stuff that still bubbles up now. So by no means do I think my happy ending is like exclusive of like all of those things too, right? Like, that's still part of it. Like, and I think I've healed from maybe the big trauma, and I haven't really healed from the little ones yet that are still sort of following me along in this life, that I have to get comfortable with that discomfort, because I don't want it to, I don't want my fear of losing love to be the reason that I don't love. I don't want my fear of, you know, taking time off to be the reason that I don't, right? Yeah. So it's like, it's constantly processing the things that will bubble up over time, even when you think you've like moved past it and you're over anything like that. The reality is it follows you.
Moving to your career now, you've got beautiful children, and I see you're working so hard, you're juggling both. And speaking of guilt, this is one thing that is a huge, like, weird trigger for me, because I have a little girl, and when she's with her dad, I'm like, but she should be with me. Should I be working when I don't have her? Am I working too much? Can I work when she's around me? Because, and then I just overthink it. And then this massive surge of guilt comes through my body, and I'm like, ah. And I find that really hard to juggle. How do you do it all?
Sometimes I allow myself to believe that I'm the little girl. Like that I'm, like, if it,
I just
if
got goosebumps then when you said that. I was like, oh. I know. Oh my God.
But like, if I look at my daughter, would I want her to throw away her dreams? Because of so another, true. Like, I want to show her that she can have two dreams at once. And this is the hard part. This is where it gets gritty for a lot of moms, is that like, you have the dream of being the mom, and you have the reality of, for not everybody can stay home or wants to stay home, or the reality of like, you can have two dreams at once. And it doesn't mean they're going to be perfect. I had to, like, at postpartum this time, I had a point where I sat down and, you know, she wanted to be fed all the time, and a laptop, I had all these deadlines going, and I'm just sobbing, and I've got this baby on my boob and a laptop in my, and a cold coffee sitting in front of me. And I just wrote down the line that, like, you're allowed to have two dreams simultaneously going at once, but it doesn't mean that they're not always sometimes going to collide. Like, sometimes they cross over, and it's, and it's so uncomfortable, and it's a bit of a crash, and it's a bit of a mess, but at the end of it, you figure out doing it side by side again. And that's why, like, some people, when they talk about their careers, like, I still will bring up that I'm a working mom, because I want both titles. I want to be known for the work I do, and I also want to be known for my mothering. So I love the title working mom. I will call my husband a working dad when he claims that title for himself, but for me, I really own that title, because it is my two dreams simultaneously existing at once, and something that I hope my children, especially my daughters, look one day and say, I have a choice here, and I am allowed to be both mother and a career person, or it's okay for me to rest, or it's okay for me to take time on my own. I watched my mother travel and do things. I want to do that for myself too. I hope that the advocacy that we do for ourselves in front of our children makes them a witness to what it is to speak up into what you need and who you are, and create healthy boundaries and healthy balance, the word that I don't believe in, but is thrown around a lot. But yeah, like, I think that that's an important thing. Like, we want so bad, the pressure we put on ourselves, we would never put on our children. We would never, when I watch my children become mothers, if they do, I would never put on that expectation of, like, abandon all other things for that role. They should be welcomed into your dream. They should be welcomed into your reality. Not that it's unchanged, but it's not, that doesn't become the one and only dream.
I've never seen it like that. And it's weird. You've given me this light bulb moment by speaking to you. You can have two dreams at the same time. It's really interesting to hear it like that, because it is a very hard juggle, but it's so worth it. And you're so right. What would I tell my little girl? What would I want her to see?
You don't want your children. Like, that was one thing that I did. So as being a stay-at-home mom, my kids had no boundaries with me whatsoever. And it made it that they were less functional in the world. I didn't parent them in a way that they knew that I could close a bathroom door for myself, or that I could leave the house without them. So it made it really rocky for them when I started working. Yeah. Even after 10 years and then fully being in school, me being out of the home was hard for them, because they didn't understand that my role as a person was more than being a mother. Now, we've worked a lot on that, and they've worked a lot for that. But that's why, like, one of my hard lines beyond, like, when you have a baby and it's just, like, safer to bring them in the bathroom with you, like, take a shower by yourself, take a bathroom break, close the door. Like the more that we respect ourselves and create boundaries with our children, the more prepared they are for the job that we're actually supposed to be doing for them, which is preparing them for life, preparing them for the world, preparing them as their children, like to be, you know, growing into this society. So how can we do that if we take the life that we have and we minimize it down to like this one little semblance of who we are? They deserve to see all facets of who we are so that their dreams are just as big and just as broad and just as bright, if I'm being honest. Like I really love that my kids have now seen both versions of me. They've seen the version that, you know, fell on the sword for them and didn't think that the blood would get all over the floor and on everybody. And now they get to see the version of me that's like, you know, constantly working at healing wounds and, you know, going out and living her dreams and doing all the things. And they are my biggest cheerleaders. Like I want to say, like, sometimes my kids will chirp me about things, but like it hasn't impacted our relationship in the least. If anything, it's bettered it because it's allowed us to really grow independently alongside each other.
I love that. And speaking of kids and online presence, do you remember one time I messaged you? And we're going to move on to trolling now and trolls, because I've had a lot of this. And someone messaged me and they said, oh my God, what would your daughter think if she saw your body like that all over the internet? If for some reason it fucking pissed me off, I was like, nah, I'm not, you know? And I thought and I thought and I thought, and your message made so much sense. But I want to hear you say it again. I wanted to hear your opinion on it. When we post things online, obviously it's out there for the world to see. What are your views on your body, everything being on the internet for your children to see? I'd like you to just re-clarify what you said.
I don't even remember what I said to you, but I'll give you where I am now, because I do think that it's important for children to see their mothers as independent people, to exercise that body autonomy, and also down to like a scientific fact. In some countries where like it's more adjusted to be nude around your children or more open with your body, they have a better relationship with their own bodies by being witness to other people who are being more open with theirs. I understand that, like, I put things on the internet. I understand where, you know, we're watching in real time, even like Britney Spears catching flack from her teenage boys being embarrassed that she shares her body. And she's speaking up for the fact that, like, I hope one day they come to respect what I'm doing, because she was forced into showing her body for so long. And now she's choosing that. That body autonomy is such an important thing for every individual to have, no matter what it is and how they're sharing it. And I think that it's, honestly, my kids have never made a thing about it, to be fair. Like, I don't know if they've ever felt a certain way, but we've always been like, anytime it's come up, it's been like, this is what I've chosen. It's not that I'm telling you have to do it, but this is my body and I'm choosing to share with people the stretch marks that my children, you know, lovely gave to me, like that life gave to me. This is a big part of like, and they have come to now also witness people come up to me and say, I actually went swimming with my kids for the first time in 5 years because of what you shared, or because you made me feel like my body wasn't wrong or didn't do a bad job. And so they've also become witness to like why it matters and why it's important. But also, if I just wanted to post thirst traps, I would also expect their support in some way. I'm not saying that they're not allowed to have their feelings. They 100% can. But they're teenagers, right? They're on their own journey of understanding what it's like to make decisions for yourself, and also recognizing me as a individual person, not as just a mother. And so I'm very sensitive in a way. Like I have to think about that. Like everybody, my grandmother can see these things. My mother can see these things. My children can see these things. I think I probably would post a lot more things if I thought that I would be allowed to, or that it would be like more acceptable. But I post where I feel is that line of my own comfort. And if it upsets certain people, it's not that I wouldn't listen or wouldn't have those conversations. It's just that I would hope that they would hear me too. And the fact that feeling ashamed of your body for like your entire life and then coming into a place of like acceptance or love or even challenging the societal norms is really, really powerful stuff and shouldn't be limited down by, you know, a little bit of discomfort that might be an initial feeling.
Our body's always sexualized. I did a shoot with Cosmopolitan Mag and I posted it about 6 times. It kept getting removed constantly. I'd repost it, it got removed. And all the kind of trolling comments from me being in underwear or whatever would come from a kind of that it shouldn't be up there because I'm sexualizing my body in a weird way. And I never really understood it because I'm thinking, yeah, no, I'm not.
I mean, it's been our whole lives. Like when we were children, boys could wear the low rise pants, but girls couldn't show an inch of belly. Our belly buttons were sexualized for a long season of time. We've had every inch of, and so then at the same time, we come into being adults or being mothers and they're like, but do people remember that a lot of us had children because of sex? Like we actually have sex after having children. We are still, so we're in a double battle. Don't sexualize me. And at the same time, I am a sexual being, even though I am a mother. I know that's a lot for people to digest, but your sexuality, like, sorry, but your grandmothers had sex, y'all. Like it is not like they were still doing the deed. Like it's uncomfortable, but it's a reality. And like, we need to not sexualize other people, but also allow them to step into their own sexuality and recognize that like mothers and women are sexual beings. Like it is a huge part. It's amazing to me that like if you watch it, if you look at it and how you know, the youthful girl is so propped up as like the sex icon, and then she's pregnant and has a baby, and then it's like, is that appropriate for her to do and dress like that now that she's a mother? It's like, you wanted this. You wanted her to like be the sexual thing, to do the sexual things, to have the children, to like, you know, reproduce, you know, this big message that they sell on women as like our role in this world. And then when they do, it's like you're punished. Like, no, now you have to like not do that. I was pregnant at 20. Like I didn't even have my years of like ever feeling like I owned my body at all. So like I really had to step into that in my 30s. And so it's not perfect, but I mean, I also was an underwear model. I don't think that my kids expected anything less, right? Like I'm literally modeling underwear. Of course I'm going to be in my underwear on the internet. That's literally my job sometimes.
And speaking of trolls and the impact that it can have on mental health and influencers online and celebrities, I know that I have been trolled from a place of disgust, from whether it be childhood friends that would pop up. There's these trolling sites, internet sites where they just troll, gang up, etc. And they go into every depth and root of your life and pick away at everything. How do you deal with comments that you must get from even the same people? Because they keep creating fake accounts and they come at you with the same things. How do you push that to one side and keep a straight head? Does it bother you?
Oh, of course it does. It always does. Not always. If it's a comment from a dude, it rarely bothers
me. I see you post them a lot and I'm like, yes, go on.
Like, come on, guys. Like, catch up with us a little bit. Like, I had one this week that was like, curves are only desirable in certain places for a reason because it shows you can reproduce. And I'm like, what a small-minded, like, decision to make. Like, my body is actually the way it is because of reproduction. Production, like dummy, like don't even. Sometimes they're just so dumb and they just go for the lowest fruit. But that's the thing. They all are picking at the lowest fruit on the tree. That's not my goal, is to worry about that. And I get there after I have like, you know, sometimes a little cry about it or I have to talk to somebody about it. But you know, when people go for the low hanging fruit, I'm going for the tree. So I go for your low hanging fruit. I've got an axe in my hands. I'm going for the tree. So the roots of these issues and the roots of their opinions and the roots of what they're saying is not what is actually the issue, is not what they've presented. We've all been conditioned in different ways. And I also recognize that a lot of people, because you have a platform, they dehumanize you. And in the process of dehumanizing you, they love the dopamine hit of, you know, letting you know how they feel about you at all points of time. And sometimes it can get really hard. I mean, especially if you're questioned for your mothering, or like you already question yourself a million times a day, and then you have on top of that people questioning you too. I read a quote just even like a week ago from Brie Larson, where she said, if I was in the business, I'm going to butcher this quote, but something along the lines of like, if I was in the business of listening to the internet's opinion, I wouldn't be doing that for myself like every single day. Like we already do it. We already pick ourselves apart. We already have these like self-examinations every single day on top of having to listen to the internet's opinion at all times. Like it's a lot to take. So twofold. One, sometimes it fuels me. Sometimes it fuels like, oh, sometimes when you're, especially on Instagram, you kind of live in a bubble of like, these people follow you. These people know who you are. They followed your story. discovery. They know everything. They're here to support you. And you don't really get as many trolls. And then there's the flip side where all of a sudden somebody like breaks into that bubble and they remind you of what's going on outside of it. So they remind you that, you know, we still have a lot of societal standards that we're working against. We have a lot of things for women in a patriarchal society that we're, you know, fighting and having conversations about. And, you know, we still have a long way to go in like defending our bodies in this world and our worth in this world. So it reminds me of my why sometimes, as tough as that is. And I don't want trolls to have like any leg up in how we run anything, but it does remind you why we're continuing to have these conversations to the point that I think one day we won't be anymore, because the pendulum swings and then it pushes back and eventually it settles in the middle.
But you know, one thing that I found interesting, when I don't post as much of my life or behind mm-hmm. the scenes or things that I really want to speak about, my engagement drops. And then I get that guilt of like, oh my God, work's going to go shit.
I'm losing everything.
Yeah. And then you're like in this catch 22 and I'm like, ah,
yeah.
You can't win. And it just gets so frustrating.
I know. Sometimes I'm like, maybe I should just post something controversial just so like they'll hate me for a second and I'll get some free engagement. No, like it's...
but it's true.
I'm not controversial enough to do anything. But, you know, at a time, there was a time where like posting anything about your body was controversial. I remember those days where I would post it and I would throw my phone across the room and like run away from it for an hour. And then I'd come back and I'd be like, what did they say? What did they say?
I used to always do that.
Right? And now I'm just like, I can't, like, I'm so exhausted. And there is that, like, I think everyone is, as a creator, is dealing with, like, there are some people who, you know, have become viral, or like there's always like those people who are like having their moment, having their rise. You and I have both had our own at different times. But then there's like that aftermath of like, I actually can't sustain at the level of creativity that I was doing three years ago. I had a baby. It's a lot different now. Mm. I can't pump out content that way. So yeah, you know what? I'm not going to grow as fast anymore. But the grass is always greener. Like sometimes I think, when I look at, you know, the community I've built and how many amazing people are there, why am I constantly looking for more? Why am I constantly like, but I just, yeah, why can't we just sit in the present moment of like, oh my goodness, this is all I've ever dreamed of. Why do I care if it upticks to more people and more responsibility, where right now there's like such an amazing, amazing community who is here, who is present, who is engaged. It is not my business who isn't here. It's like having a house party and standing outside waiting for people to come indoors and never sitting in your own party. Like sometimes I just want to sit in the room.
But why do we want more all the time? It's so unhealthy, isn't
it? Well, it is and it's not. You have to remember, like, your person is also your brand. And that's something that hasn't really been built into, like, the business models yet. Because we forget that, like, you, if you're a person and you're a brand, then you also have to, like, really be careful about your mental health, because if you tank, everything tanks. So we are so closely tied to like our insights and our analytics because of the business side of it. The problem is that we personally tied ourselves to it too. So like we every day show up to work. I shouldn't put it in quotes. We show up to work. And we find out, and we get like a report card every day. We get like a performance review every single day. And so it's hard to separate the business from the person. And at the same time, we're fighting so hard for the business to be considered legitimate in the society, which it is. At this point, the stats are beyond belief. Advertising is beyond belief. It is like it's getting to a point of being a really well-oiled machine and really legitimate. Anything that women do and especially start or champion will often be sort of minimized and mocked and whatnot. So of course, influencer marketing will be something that people will minimize and mock, or podcasting or all of these different things as like easy and just like fast cash or whatever. But the reality is it's like a full business. So it can be hard when you talk, like, I don't know, unless you like are an owner of a startup, but it's still not a personal attack. When you show up to work and you're looking at your like numbers and your profits and your like your engagement that month, it isn't personally tied to who you are as a person. So that's like a really, that's a big part of this industry that isn't talked about a lot. And we often fail to recognize within ourselves. Like, it's okay that we look at the numbers. It's also a lot of work to separate ourselves from them.
And I think that working to separate on it a little bit more is probably better, and to post without having that knowledge of the numbers and to take it back to why I'm doing it. I want to help people. And it is hard, right?
Yeah.
Sometimes.
Yeah.
secret.
You know, it's funny though. Like, I remember back when I was in like weight loss and they used to always advise that you don't look at your numbers. And same with stocks. Like, you don't look at your numbers on a daily basis. Like, don't look at your weight every day. Don't look at your stocks every day. Look at it as an overall. So overall, what are your accomplishments? And so now I'm like, I really need to get into that mindset where like, my value isn't, you know, I remember stepping on a scale and if it was like up or down, that would like make me feel different. We can't be focused on like working on our confidence and being authentic with ourselves if we're also measuring how other people view us in that every single day. And then it changes the character, that it changes our character, and it changes how authentically we show up if we're measuring it against, will people like me more or less for this? Will I get more or less for this? Like, that is, or when you put really good work, some of my favorite posts that I've ever done and my favorite pieces of work that I've ever written, nobody's ever, like, it was like the least engaged things ever. Like, it just is. Like, that's the nature of the biz, but I'm happy with it. And I have to return to, like, if I'm looking at a body of work and an overall growth system, where do I want to be? And especially for someone like me who grew off of weight loss and then completely did a 180, I had to lose almost all of those entire followings in order to get a new one. I didn't expect it to go. I had like 60,000. I think it went from like 60,000 into like basically a turnover. So I lost all of those and regained new ones. And then by the end of a year and a half of like showing up authentically me instead of the version of myself that I thought people would like, that's where I hit the millions. And I always have to remind myself of that every single time I feel like I'm falling into like, will they like me or is this okay? And are they going to be mad at me for this? It's like, you never made it based on what you thought everybody else wanted of you. You made it off of like real live who you are. And so sticking to that and working on yourself the most you can, I think is the best we can do. And that includes looking at the numbers and not equating it to our worth.
What is one thing you would tell your younger self before we leave?
That you don't have to go and find yourself. We always talk about going out and finding yourself. I think what you realize as you get older is that you already inherently are who you are. So come home. Come home to yourself instead of trying to go out and find yourself. Make it a homecoming. Almost everybody I talk to, and it's like, who did you think you were going to be? And like, who are you now? Almost all of us like return to, when we go out and find ourselves, we find the version of ourselves that was alive at 6, 7, 8 years old. A lot of us just need to uncondition from everything that people said in between all that time. And then we have to come back to who we inherently are. So don't go out looking for a different version of you. Come back to who you are. And I think that that more pure form of you is going to be where you find the most happiness, the most success, and hopefully the best relationships of your life.
Definitely. It's that inner child that is within us somewhere, waiting to be heard, right?
Yes, yes, yes.
Thank you so much to Sarah for being so open, and to you right now for listening. Please follow the podcast so you don't miss future episodes, and also follow Sarah on Instagram. You can find a link in the episode notes. I'll be back next week with another great conversation, this time with Millie Gooch, the founder of Sober Girl Society. Thank you for listening.